By Christmas Eve, 1914, the First World War had raged across Europe for nearly 5 months. The grim reality of a hard war began to set in. Both sides began carving out trenches across the Eastern and Western fronts. They prepared for a war that had no end in sight. The Western Front extended for hundreds of miles through France and Belgium, protecting the heart of France from an invading German-led army. Life in the trenches was bleak. Soldiers on both sides were at the mercy of a bitter European winter. Supplies and morale were dwindling. There was insufficient medical care, and the enemy trenches were often only 100 feet from their own fortified positions. The distance between the opposing trenches, referred to as no man's land, was littered with the bodies of the deceased from both sides. To step into this space meant to step into nearly certain death. It was against this backdrop that on a moonlit night and a frost-covered ground, the unexpected occurred. It was something that defied the cold realities of war and would have a lasting impact on all those involved and even beyond.
Well, let me say Merry Christmas, everyone. We're so glad that you chose to be with us this evening for one of our Christmas Eve services. And let me just stop by saying, if you have any friends that weren't able to get in tonight and got turned away because there wasn't enough seating, tell them we're very, very sorry. We hope that they can come back next week and join us for a service. But there are a number of people that just weren't able to get in tonight because of just the seating situation. So if you know any of those people, just express our condolences to them for that. And then lastly, before I get into the message, if you have a chance after service tonight and you've not seen it already, stop by the cafe and check out our Christmas village. We had one of the craziest stories happen to us about a week and a half ago. Is a guy who does not come to our church, just knows somebody in our church, for whatever reason, decided to donate a Christmas village to us. One of these, like, very expensive, you know, those little buildings, and I think it's Department 56 or something. And they say that the set that he gave us is worth over $25,000. It's crazy. Now, my wife has had a dream to have one of these in our home for years, but there's just no way that we're going to go buy something like this. And so she's been living out her dream all week, building this with a team of people, and they've been working around the clock to get this village set up, and it is huge. And it really is something special to see. So take the kids over there and go take a look after service tonight. It really is pretty awesome to see what they have built and what they've done. Now, we have no idea what we're going to do with it next week, but at least it was great for Christmas. So we do have it for Christmas. I don't know about you, but I love the Christmas story. But not just the Christmas story, because there's the original Christmas story. That's what we're here for today. But how many of you know, over the last 2,000 years, there have been a lot of Christmas stories. Stories that are built on or built around or built because of the actual Christmas story. And I recalled one of them recently. I heard somebody talking about it, and it kind of piqued my curiosity. And I remember hearing about it a long time ago. And so I decided to do some more research on it and kind of refresh my mind. And so what I want to do tonight is give you a little kind of a historical recounting of World War I. I know some of you are going to be thinking, what in the world does this have to do with Christmas? Like how is this going to tie together? Trust me, it does. Everyone that's been here, all seven services so far over the weekend, it all fits together by the end of the message, but it may not feel like it's going anywhere at the beginning. You just have to kind of go with me as we get into a little bit of a history lesson. What I discovered is 104 years ago, this guy right here was assassinated. He was assassinated, and it sparked this massive global conflict. His name was Franz Ferdinand, and he wasn't the leader of any particular nation. He was just one of the many archdukes of the nation of Austria. And on his death, it sparked this global conflict that within a few days would become the very first world war. The chain of events, the first thing to happen was Austria declares war on Serbia. They believed it was Serbian nationalists that assassinated Franz Ferdinand. And then Russia comes to their defense and declares war on Austria. And then a few days later, Germany declares war on Russia and France. And then you have France and Britain declaring war on Germany. And then finally, the U.S. gets involved and declares war on Germany. All of this happened in a matter of just a very short amount of time, just a few days, all because of one man's life. Now, I don't want to disparage this poor brother's life because I never met him and I didn't know him, and I'm sure he was a great person, but I can say it did not have to escalate the way it did. It didn't have to get so big. I mean, nobody should ever have to lose their life in that way. But if you look at the chain of events, because of one person's death, it sparked this global conflict, World War I, that lasted for over 4 years at the price of over 16 million people who lost their life. And the reason World War I was so deadly was because of a military tactic that they called trench warfare. Now, I hope you see the parallel with this today. Trench warfare is basically you establish your position. You have two opposing armies, and there's a battlefield. In the center of the field, they call it no man's land, and on each side, they dig into their position. They dig into these trenches. They hide themselves down in these trenches, never seeing their enemy eye to eye. They just kind of establish themselves, dig themselves in, get into these trenches, and then they just hurl a whole bunch of ammo and a whole bunch of bullets across the battlefield, killing a whole bunch of people. And when you study the history of World War I, the sad reality is the battle lines did not move much. Not much took place geographically with World War I. Not much was accomplished, apart from the fact that millions of people had to die. So how does this tie into Christmas? Well, 6 months into the very first World War, we get one of the most famous Christmas stories centered on Christmas. It was Christmas Eve, 1914, this very day, 104 years ago. You have in the western front of the war in the nation of France, you have the German troops on one side dug into their trenches and the British troops on another side dug into their trenches. And in the middle of night on Christmas Eve, the British soldiers began to hear singing coming out of the German trench. And as they listened to the singing, they recognized the tune, the melody. The German soldiers were singing the Christmas carol, Silent Night, in German. And as they heard them singing this Christmas carol, all of a sudden the British troops joined in and began to sing the carol in English. And they tell us that all night long they would go back and forth singing Christmas carols, coming out of the trenches, singing together. Well, that first light of dawn on Christmas Day, the following morning, we don't know if it was a British soldier, we don't know if it was a German soldier, but somebody came out of the trenches unarmed with his hands up in a sign of peace, asking for somebody on the other side to come out and meet them. And on Christmas Day, they laid down their weapons and they called a truce, and the German soldiers and the British soldiers came together. Up until this point, it was a lot of fighting and it was a lot of killing and it was a lot of hating on each other. But on that day, they realized they all had something in common. You see, both the British and the German were Christian, and they had common ground that caused them to come together. They came together in worship of their Savior, the birth of Jesus. And on that battlefield on Christmas Day, they would exchange gifts, cigarettes, and chocolate, and even play a game of soccer in the middle of the battlefield. And it changed their life. It completely changed who they were. Because the next day, when the fighting would resume and the killing would resume, when the German soldiers and the British soldiers went back into their trenches, they refused to pull the trigger on each other. And so the officers had to send these soldiers to different battle fronts in the war just to get them to pull the trigger again. And in the military, they created a new rule called no fraternization. Why? Because you can't get to know who you hate, because if you get to know who you hate, you may not kill them. And that's what they discovered. And they called this the Christmas Truce of 1914. Now, that's a nice history lesson. What does that have to do with me today? Well, I hope you see the parallel here, because I believe right now in America, we're experiencing trench warfare all over again. And our weapons aren't bullets and ammo like their weapons in World War I. Our weapons are our beliefs, our words. But we have the most divided nation, and people are so dug into their trenches that they won't budge an inch. They won't even give an inch to see any common ground or see it any other way. We're divided politically. You've got you know, Republicans and Democrats so entrenched into their positions that all they want to do is throw a whole bunch of ammo across the battlefield and kill as many people as they can. You see this racially in our nation. You see it socially in our nation. You see it in marriages. You have husbands and wives so entrenched they won't give an inch to try to find any type of peace in their marriage. And what's making everything so much worse is social media. Like, I'm at the place now where I kind of think the devil invented social media. Like, there may be some good things to it, and, you know, there are some good things to it, but, man, it's ugly. Like, there are people who will go on their Facebook right now, and they will say the most horrible things about another human being that Jesus Christ went to a cross and gave his life for, a human that they have never met before, but they'll say the most horrible things about him, and if they ever met him face-to-face and looked him in the eye, they would never say those things about him. It's like we have this trench where I can hide in my trench. I never have to look my enemy in the eye, and I can just throw bombs across social media and try to destroy as many people as I can. And I don't know about you, but this year has been exhausting. Like, it is emotionally exhausting to listen and to watch the news. Like, I get worn out watching. I mean, it's just a mess. And I'm a big, like, serious satellite radio guy. I love my satellite radio in my car. I listen, you know, for me, most of the year, I just listen to the news when I'm driving around. I could not wait for November this year because every November on satellite radio, you get Channel 3 and Channel 4. Who's my satellite radio people? You know, Channel 3, Channel 4, you know, the Christmas channels, you know, it's Christmas music. And it was like the greatest break in my life to just turn off the news for a couple months and just listen to Christmas music. Can I tell you, I've been so much happier the last few weeks just listening to Christmas music. And I really believe it's time for another truce. It's time to get some healing in our marriages, some healing in our families, some healing in our nation. So what is a truce? A truce is simply a timeout in the fight. It's just a break. It's a suspension. Let's stop killing each other for just a little while and let's come together on some common ground. Let's just find an area where we can agree. And there's always a catalyst. In 1914, the catalyst was Christmas. It was Jesus. He brought two groups of people that were killing each other together on some common ground. So how does a truce work? Well, someone has to take the first step. Now, here's the problem, because the question is, who takes the first step? And you're going to hate the answer. You know what the answer is? You know who takes the first step? Whoever considers themselves to be the mature one in the relationship. Now, isn't that the problem? Because we all know we're the mature one, right? Like, no one in here today is the immature one in your conflict. Like, you are the mature one in your relationship. Everyone else is wrong. You're right. And the only reason you're in the mess that you're in right now is because of them. And so they need to get their act together so that you can have peace, right? But it's always the mature one that takes the first step. And then we've got to be willing to drop our weapons. And again, our weapons aren't guns and ammo like they were in 1914. It's our beliefs. It's our ideology. We've gotten to the place where our belief has become more important than people. And then we have to focus on what unites. And let's be honest. There are differences. We see things differently. There are different viewpoints in life. But does it have to be so ugly? Does it have to be so vile? Does it have to be so evil? Because at the end of the day, we are all one race, the human race. And for those of us that live here, we're all one people, American. And for those of us that follow Christ, we're all Christian. What would happen if we focused on the one thing that unites all of us, Jesus, and just laid down our weapons and called a truce? I'll tell you what will happen. Just like in 1914, there's this war raging externally, but there was also a war going on internally that was being settled in the hearts of these soldiers. And what took place is they left changed. They were changed when they walked away. And that's the opportunity I want to give you tonight. The opportunity we want to offer you is, why not this year, instead of just attending another Christmas service? Why not, instead of attending another Christmas event, why not experience one this year? Why not experience something where you can actually leave changed? Where you can do something different to deal with the conflict and the turmoil in your life. You see, the world has a way of dealing with conflict. The world actually has a word for dealing with conflict. We call it what? Conflict resolution. Now, here's the problem with resolution. Resolution means you've got to keep working it out. Resolution means you've got to figure out who the winner is, and you figure out who the loser is, and you've got to find some compromise. Well, they eventually resolved World War I. But the problem is it took 4 years and over 16 million people's life to do it. They had to die in the process for resolution. The Bible doesn't handle conflict that way. The Bible has a whole nother method for dealing with conflict. It's called reconciliation. Conflict, reconciliation. What is reconciliation? Well, the word reconcile is an accounting term. It's a math term. What reconcile means is you bring something together by bringing the balance to zero. You give somebody a zero balance. They have all this that they owe, and you give them a zero balance, and all of a sudden it is reconciled because they don't owe anything anymore. Let me put it like this. I am so glad that Jesus did not resolve my sin. He reconciled my sin. Jesus didn't sit down with me and work out my sin and figure out my sin and talk through all of my sin. I mean, if we had to discuss my sin, it would have been a long conversation just on 1993 alone. I mean, I thank God he didn't resolve my sin. He reconciled it. What God did is he gave my heart balance a zero. He brought it to zero, and then he gave me an ability to do that for others. This is the message of Christianity. This is why we celebrate Christmas. This is why Jesus came. Paul put it like this in his letter to the church of Ephesus. He says, "For Christ himself has brought peace to us." See, Jesus came to bring us peace. He united Jews and Gentiles. These are two groups of people that hated each other. They were in conflict. They did not see eye to eye, and yet he brought them together into one people when in his own body on the cross, that's where he accomplished it. He took all of our sin. The reason we have a zero balance is because he took everything that you owed, everything that you were in debt to, your balance, and he took it to the cross so that you could have a zero balance. And because of that, he now breaks down the wall of hostility that separates us. And that's what we need to see again. We need to see this wall of hostility come down in our families, in our marriages, in our nation. He made peace between Jews and Gentiles by creating in himself one new people from two groups. Together as one body, Christ reconciled. He gave a zero balance to both groups to God by means of his death on the cross. It was his death that gives us that zero balance, and now our hostility toward each other can be removed, can be taken down, can be put to death. Through Jesus, God brings our balance to zero. The Apostle Paul goes on to say in his letter to the church of Corinth, he says, "All of this is from God, who reconciled us, who gave us a zero balance to himself through Christ. And as a result of us getting this zero balance, he now gives us a ministry to give a zero balance to others. The ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ." And I love this phrase right here. This could be the greatest gift you receive this Christmas. Not counting people's sins against them. That's what it means to have a zero balance. Can you imagine what your life would look like if that became your reality? Can you imagine what it would feel like to live your life knowing that God does not hold your past over your head? That God does not count your sin against you? That every shame, everything you've ever done wrong, every sin, every guilt, every regret, everything in your past can be completely forgiven. You can be given a zero balance, and you can live the rest of your life with God not counting your sin against you. That's the greatest gift you'll ever receive on Christmas. And he has committed to us now the message of reconciliation. In other words, when we are reconciled with God, when we get a zero balance from God, he gives us then the power to reconcile with others. But let me be very honest. It's very, very hard to give somebody a zero balance until you've received one. It's very, very hard to forgive somebody of what they owe you until you've been forgiven of what you owe. One of the greatest stories of reconciliation didn't happen in World War I. It actually happened in World War II. It was the story of Louis Zamperini. Many of you saw the movie Unbroken. He was an Olympic hero. He was a war hero. Unfortunately, the movie ends where the real battle of his life began. Because if you read his biography, if you read his life story, when he came back from the war, from living as a POW for years, being tortured, being abused, being degraded, being humiliated, all at the hands of the Japanese commanders, especially the one that they called Bird. I mean, just the absolute abuse he went through. He came back haunted. He came back with bitterness. He came back, in his words, he could not forgive what they did to him. What they did to him was so horrible, and the movie does not do justice to the torture that he endured. He said he had nightmares, night after night after night, of the abuse that he went through. He had fantasies of hunting these people down and killing them for what they did to him. He said the unforgiveness led him into depression. It led him into nightmares. It led him into alcoholism. It began to destroy his marriage. This is a war hero that endured a POW camp, but he could not survive unforgiveness. He said it wasn't until his wife drug him to a Billy Graham crusade in Los Angeles that for the very first time he heard the message of reconciliation. He heard that God could give him a zero balance, that God could take everything he had ever done, all of the shame, all of the regret, all of the sin of his life, and forgive him and never again count his sin against him. He said in that night that he received Jesus and he gave his life to Jesus and he received that zero balance from God, he said the most unexpected thing took place. He said, when I received that zero balance from God, all of a sudden the hatred and the unforgiveness that I had held on to began to dissipate. And I found myself forgiving the people that abused me. He said, the nightmares went away immediately. The depression went away. So much so that a year later, Louis Zamperini traveled to Japan because he wanted to track down all of the prison guards that had abused him and tortured him so that he could look them in the eye and say, I forgive you. I don't hold it against you because of what Jesus has done in my life. I forgive you, and let me tell you about Jesus. So what are you saying, Pastor? Are you saying that I have to forgive? I'm telling you, you can. There is a way that you can, that you will have the ability to let go. I'm not saying what happened to you was right. I'm not saying to you that it's okay. I'm not saying that it didn't hurt. What I'm saying is, as long as you hold on to it, you're not punishing the person by holding on to unforgiveness. You're punishing yourself. And look, you can try to resolve the situation, but there's going to be casualties. And yes, there's a place for learning, and there's a place for figuring out how you can do things better in counseling. But the choice is, you can reconcile or you can resolve. And the way to reconcile is you let God give you reconciliation. You let God bring your balance to zero, and then all of a sudden you can bring the balance of others to zero. This is what Louis Zamperini discovered. It's a simple statement: the forgiven forgive. Let me put it like this. If you're struggling to forgive somebody right now, if you've been hurt, if you've been betrayed, if you've been wounded, and you're struggling to let go, if you're struggling to forgive, if you just can't bring yourself to forgive that person, let me be very honest with you tonight. The real issue in your life is not you being able to forgive that person. The real issue in your life is you being forgiven. Because your real struggle is not you forgiving the person that hurt you. The real struggle that you have is you allowing God to forgive you. Because here's what I know, when somebody receives forgiveness from God, their heart changes. And all of a sudden, they are able to do what they couldn't do. So I'm asking you to be honest with yourself tonight. If you're struggling to forgive someone, maybe it's because you're struggling with God forgiving you. And this is why, as a church, we're not inviting you to just be a part of a church. Like, we're not inviting you to just come attend somewhere once a week. What we're inviting you to as a church is to be a part of a process where God works in you, and God does what only God can do. He gives you this ability to reconcile, to let go, to heal. He gives you peace in your heart. God gives you this ability through his process to become the person that you've always wanted to be. Because let's be very honest, there's a person you really want to be, but because of different issues in your life and different struggles in your life, it's like, if I could ever work this out of my life, I know I could be so much better. There is the person who you really hope to be, who you really wish you could be. And what we want to invite you to is to be a part of a process where that can actually take place, where it can become a reality and not just a dream. The way we say it as a church is we call it a one-year challenge. A one-year challenge. You give us 1 year of your life and see what God can do. Just see what God can do. The way we say it, give it 1 year. Run the game plan the way we prescribe it. I mean, get involved in everything. Go all in. And if your life isn't radically better a year from today, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come find me, and I'll leave the church with you because we obviously don't know what we're doing. But here's the truth. Anybody that's ever taken the one-year challenge, it doesn't take more than 2 to 3 months. And they're coming to me and they're saying, I can't thank you enough. What God has done in my life, what I am becoming, that the person, I can't even begin to thank you for what is taking place inside of my heart and inside of my family and inside of my life. So why not this year, instead of making some New Year's resolutions, why don't you make some New Year's reconciliations? Why don't you allow God to give you a zero balance so that you have the ability to give some other people a zero balance? Because the first Christmas truce wasn't in 1914. The first Christmas truce was the day we celebrate over 2,000 years ago when God stepped into the chaos of planet Earth. God stepped into the chaos of this Roman world of Roman and Jews. God stepped into the chaos of this family, this young teenage couple who are pregnant and they're not married yet in the mess of the situation. And the Christmas story tells us in Luke 2, the angel said to them, do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy. Can I tell you, when you hear Christianity for the first time, that's the reaction. If that's not the reaction, you didn't hear about Christianity, you heard about religion. Because when you hear about what Jesus came to bring, I'm telling you right now, it's good news and it causes joy. If he didn't create that in you, you didn't hear about Christianity, you heard about man's religion. And there is a big difference for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloth and lying in a manger. Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly hosts appeared with the angel praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest heaven and on earth, peace. You realize you can have peace on earth. There'll never be peace on earth. The world is always going to be in conflict. But you can have peace in the middle of the conflict. But it's contingent on something. It says, to those. So it only, God's peace only goes to those on whom his favor rests. What does that mean? That means you have to decide. You've got to decide if you want to be part of that group. You've got to decide if this applies to you or not, because it's not automatic. And that's why we say, why don't you not just celebrate Christmas this year? Why don't you experience a Christmas? Why don't you experience the birth of Jesus in your life and see what could take place? Let me take you back to the song that we open with. Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. That's what is available to you this Christmas. The greatest gift this year is not something you're going to unwrap under a tree. The greatest gift this year that you could ever possibly receive is getting a zero balance from God, taking all of your sin, all of your shame, and allowing God to give you a zero balance. Only Jesus can do that. Only Jesus can bring peace in the middle of the turmoil to give you a silent night. For some of you, you haven't had a silent night in a long time. There's turmoil, there's conflict, there's no peace. But it's absolutely possible if you'll come together on him. Let's close with this.